This is A-State Connections on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves. This is the weekly segment called A-State Connections and Created State, Making Connections That Count. In today's podcast episode, we continue playing back numerous student presentations from the Created State Virtual Symposium. Today's presentations are from the College of Nursing and Health Professions at Arkansas State University. We'll feature students Joseph Austin, Randy Wright, Ashlyn Blankenship, and Emily Allen. Up first is Joseph Austin with his presentation titled, Teachers' Perception on Screen Time in 5th and 6th Grade Classrooms, Dr. Susan Snellgrove, Mentor.
Over the past few years, technology has been integrated in nearly all aspects of life, including our school systems. The American Association of Pediatrics has put out recommendations to have consistent limits on screen time in children ages 6 and older. Now, screen time is defined as a term used for activities done in front of a screen, such as watching TV, working on a computer, or playing a video game. Research has shown that teachers have varying views on the use of technology in school. They think that it can either be a distraction or that it can cause students to be more well-rounded. My research question is, how do teachers believe screen time at home and in schools affects school performance in 5th and 6th grade classrooms? I have two hypotheses with this research question. The first is that teachers will be split on the topic of screen time in schools based on age and what subject they teach. The second being, teachers will agree that screen time at home decreases school performance. Current research indicates that screen time is linked to many physical health problems. Due to the sedentary behavior associated with screen time, research has linked it to an increase in prevalence of obesity, decreased muscle mass, sleep problems, and musculoskeletal pain. It has also been linked to mental health issues. There is a positive correlation between depressive symptoms, stress, anxiety, and increased screen time. The only exception to this is a negative correlation between binge watching and severe depressive symptoms. Research shows that recommendations on screen time are not widely known. Studies aimed towards parents showed that very few know screen time regulations or enforce those regulations at home. Teachers generally share one of three views on screen time in schools. They either think that it is a distraction to students during school, that it can help students learn in an individualized manner, or that it impacts students' long-term development. Participants included 13 teachers actively teaching a 5th and 6th grade classroom over the age of 18. Participants were recruited from publicly available email addresses according to school websites. Schools utilized were located in Northeast and Central Arkansas. A 14-question survey was sent through SurveyMonkey, analyzing demographics, technology utilized in classrooms, and opinions on trends in school performance based on screen time. The survey was emailed to participants in January of 2020, with a reminder sent 2 weeks later. The survey remained open for 2 months before results were analyzed. 60 teachers were emailed the survey. Of those, 13 completed it. The average age of the respondents was 35 to 44 years old, which composed 30.8% of the group. Additionally, 30.8% of the group had been teaching for 20 or more years. An analysis of the results showed that teachers have varying beliefs on how screen time impacts school performance. 5 of the respondents indicated that if screen time in schools decreased, the performance would increase. 4 teachers believed that school performance would decrease if screen time in schools was decreased. Additionally, 4 teachers believed that screen time has no significant impact on school performance. An analysis of this data showed no correlation between age or number of years teaching and opinion on screen time in schools. 80% of math teachers who responded indicated that screen time in schools could be beneficial to students. No other subjects taught showed a consistent opinion. In contrast to differing opinions on screen time in schools, teachers showed more unified opinions on how screen time at home impacts school performance. 85% of respondents indicated that if screen time at home was decreased, school performance would be increased. The remaining 2 teachers indicated that school performance would not be impacted by a decrease of screen time at home. The hypothesis that teachers will be split on the topic of screen time in schools based on age and what subject they taught was proven wrong. The study showed no indication that age was a factor in opinion on technology in schools, and the only subject that showed unity in opinion was math. However, the hypothesis that teachers will agree that screen time at home decreases school performance was proven correct. The researcher recommends that the Arkansas State Board of Education creates clear guidelines on screen time in schools to comply with the American Association of Pediatrics and to provide teachers with a clear goal. More research is needed on how school performance is truly impacted by screen time trends.
Next is Randy Wright with a presentation titled, Education's Impact on HPV Immunization Rates in Rural Arkansas, Dr. Stanley Foster, Mentor.
The project question is, in males and females age 11 to 18 currently residing in rural Arkansas, does implementation of an evidence-based HPV vaccination clinical intervention program compared with current clinical practice affect HPV vaccine uptake after 1 month of implementation? The aims of my study were to increase HPV vaccination rates, including initiation and completion of series in adolescents 11 to 18 years old in rural Arkansas, and to also increase healthcare provider and clinical staffs practicing in rural Arkansas's knowledge and communication with patients / parents regarding HPV vaccination. I did use descriptive analysis for this study, specifically chi-square test method. Data was exported from Excel to SPSS software, and then everything was numerically coded. These are the formulations that I used for the results of my study. This study was completed in a private rural health clinic in Northeast Arkansas, which provides care for over 7,000 patients, including 600 patients 11 to 18 years old that are eligible for vaccination. The staff includes 2 full-time nurse practitioners and 11 support staff, and then immunizations come from the VFC, SHIP programs, and then private immunizations. The population for the chart review included males and females 11 to 18 years old that had presented to the clinic during the allotted time frame, which was either 4 weeks prior to intervention or 4 weeks after intervention. 100 charts were pulled for both pre- and post-intervention. The survey population included all of the healthcare providers and support staff that worked within the rural health clinic. The instruments used included a survey, which was a validated tool developed by the Gilling School of Global Public Health at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. It was provided pre- and post-intervention to clinic employees, where it was self-administered in a written format. The data collection tool was also used, which looked at gender, age, insurance status, HPV vaccine status, and up-to-date on other vaccines. The researcher was responsible for creation and application of the interventions and then the training, which included a 30-minute PowerPoint working lunch addressing HPV vaccination and language regarding the vaccine. The intervention bundle included 9 interventions. The interventions included the nurse being responsible for pulling all immunization records for patients prior to the clinic opening daily. All walk-in patients had to have the shot record pulled by the receptionist, and then the vaccine information statements had to be placed on the clipboards with the shot records. Nursing assistants made sure that the immunization record and the VISs were on every clipboard before getting patients back, and the VISs were given to the parents in the room. Nursing assistants had to make sure that the immunization records were placed outside of the room so that the healthcare provider could make sure they were acknowledged. Prior to entering the room, the healthcare provider had to make sure that if there wasn't a shot record on the clipboard, then they had to get it pulled. HPV reminder posters were placed in every patient exam room and in the waiting room. Every patient was scheduled to follow up on appointments for their second or third vaccines, and they were also giving a reminder magnet. An office assistant initiated reminder calls for those that were identified as missed opportunities on WebIZ, and the HPV immunization quality measure was implemented on the EMR system. The results of my study demonstrated that the training and emphasis placed on the HPV vaccine improved clinical staff's feelings about routinely recommending the vaccine. 100% of respondents would recommend the vaccine, and it was important to them post-intervention. Confidence also improved, with 100% feeling confident addressing the HPV vaccine post-intervention. I also found through my survey that the bundled interventions and training were very well accepted, with 100% of the respondents agreeing it fit into their workflow and that they would recommend it to their colleagues. The vaccination rates also were significantly improved, which was the aim of the study. The first injection rate increased 17%, second injection rate 21%, third injection rate 7%, and our series completion increased by 21%. HPV vaccine uptake was directly impacted by this multi-component approach. The results of the study demonstrated significant improvement in HPV vaccination implementation and in series completion, which was the whole aim of the study. The interventions and trainings were well accepted and easily implemented by the staff, and then we're going to see HPV vaccination rates continue to improve as the incidence of the missed opportunities continues to decrease within the clinic. My hope is that future studies are going to focus on utilization of the training and the interventions in other clinic sites.
That was Randy Wright. Up next is Ashlyn Blankenship with a presentation, Microtranscatheter Pacing System, Donna Caldwell, Mentor.
In the United States, more than 2 million people are affected by irregular heart rhythms or arrhythmias, and the most common treatment option for these patients is a pacemaker. Traditional pacemakers work by controlling the electrical activity in the heart, and that corrects arrhythmias. For traditional pacemakers, an incision is made and a pocket is made under the skin on the chest. The pacemaker is then implanted in that pocket and then sutured in. Leads are attached to the pacemaker and they travel through the left subclavian vein into the heart. Well, in 2016, Medtronic, a medical device company, released a new pacing system called the Microtranscatheter Pacing System, or the MicroTPS. This new device is similar to traditional pacemakers in that it does correct arrhythmias. However, that pacemaker is implanted via a catheter through the vein in the patient's thigh, so there's no incision made in the chest and no pocket made under the skin. For this reason, the MicroTPS provides a better treatment option to patients in need of single-chamber ventricular pacing. I examined infection, complication, and success rates for the traditional pacemaker and the MicroTPS, as well as assessed the risk and benefits of both pacemakers. To examine both pacemakers, I evaluated clinical trials and gathered information from Medtronic. Patients who are candidates for the micro pacemaker include patients with atrial fibrillations, or AFib, and symptomatic bradycardia and tachycardia. The micro, however, is not safe for patients with inferior vena cava filters, mechanical tricuspid valves, previously implanted traditional pacemakers, or patients with morbid obesity. The micro is 90% smaller than a traditional pacemaker, and it requires no leads, no incision on the chest, and no pocket under the skin. For this reason, the complication rate is only 2.7%. Whereas the complication rate for a traditional pacemaker is 9.4%. The micro has more than a 99% success rate with less than a 1% infection rate. With a traditional pacemaker, there is a surgical scar from the incision that's made on the chest, and the device leaves a visible lump under the skin. Most traditional pacemakers are not magnetic resonance imaging safe or MRI safe, whereas the Micra is MRI safe up to 3 Tesla, which is the strength of the majority of MRI machines in most hospitals. The Micra has a minimum battery life of 10 years, and when the battery does expire, a new Micra is simply placed next to the previous one. There's no need for surgical removal of the device. A traditional pacemaker has a battery life of anywhere from 5 to 15 years, but when the battery of a traditional pacemaker expires, it requires surgical removal. This is a chest x-ray showing a traditional pacemaker, which is right here, and it shows the leads coming from the pacemaker through the left subclavian vein down into the heart. So here's where the incision is made, and there will be a lump under the skin right there. This is an x-ray showing a micro pacemaker. As you can see, it is much smaller than a traditional pacemaker, and there are no leads anywhere. On the left here is a traditional pacemaker, and on the right here is the micro pacemaker. As you can see, again, it's much smaller, and it's roughly the size of a quarter. Every year, approximately 1 million pacemakers are implanted in the United States. Therefore, it's important to know the different options that are available to patients. And the more informed we are as healthcare professionals, the better we can advocate for better and safer treatment options for our patients.
That was Ashlyn Blankenship. And finally, Emily Allen with her presentation, Breast Cancer Screening Rates, Dr. Christopher Jordan, Mentor.
One out of every eight American women will develop breast cancer in her life. Breast cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in women in the United States, with 232,000 women diagnosed with this disease in 2015. The average incidence rate of breast cancer per 100,000 people from 2012 to 2016 was 147.9 for the United States, and slightly lower at 142.6 for the state of Arkansas. A screening mammogram is utilized to detect breast cancer at an early stage, which allows for better treatment options and reduced mortality by finding more incidence of the disease while it is still localized and prior to spreading and affecting regional nodes. This supports the practice of providers to encourage all patients to adhere to the recommended mammogram screening guidelines. The United States Preventive Services Task Force recommends that women aged 50 to 74 years old who are not high risk should receive biannual mammogram screenings for breast cancer. The Healthy People 2020 goal for women ages 50 to 74 who have received a mammogram in the last 2 years is 81.1%. Only 72.4% of women in the United States ages 50 to 74 years old are adhering to these screening guidelines. The purpose of this study is to compare the biannual mammogram screening rates of average risk patients aged 50 to 74 in a local clinic in Northeast Arkansas to the national average rate of 72.4% receiving mammogram screenings. IRB approval was obtained through Arkansas State University, and a retrospective chart review was performed for this study. Electronic medical records of 50 patients at a local Northeast Arkansas clinic were reviewed. The dates utilized in the study were January 1st, 2019 through November 18, 2019. A data collection tool was used to gather data. Data collected included age, whether the patient was screened in the office, and if biannual mammogram had been performed. Inclusion criteria were female patients ages 50 to 74 years old. Exclusion criteria were male patients, any females younger than 50 years old, any female older than 74 years old. If the patient had a current or history of breast cancer, or a first-degree relative with current or history of breast cancer. This study found that the rate of female patients ages 50 to 74 years old at a local clinic in Northeast Arkansas who had received biannual mammogram screenings was 76%. In light of the recommendations by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force for women ages 50 to 74 years old to receive biannual screening mammograms, this study found that the patients at this clinic had better adherence rates than the United States average, however, still falling below the Healthy People 2020 goal. This leaves room for healthcare providers to address the barriers with some patients or provide a reminder for other patients and further encourage adherence to this guideline. Early detection allows early treatment, which improves the rates of mortality related to breast cancer. This is education that can be provided to our patients.
Well, today we heard from students in the College of Science and Mathematics at Arkansas State University. Don't forget to subscribe to the Created State podcast at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, subscribe to the new KASU app, which makes it very easy to find the Created State podcast. And tell others about the podcast, and also leave us a 5-star review, and that helps us get the podcast out to more ears. You're listening to A-State Connections on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves.